Happy Halloween, everyone. I'm either dressed as one of the dwarfs, either sleepy or grumpy. So, but I'm glad to see you all here this morning. I have no disclosures, really. No disclosures. As I think a lot of you know, there's been a proliferation of direct-to-consumer genetic testing companies over the last few years. For those who don't know, many of these companies market genetic tests directly to consumers online. You pay your money, you get a kit, usually a buccal swab, sometimes to get a blood sample, you send it back and you get your results. That's the typical model. And some of these companies test for only one gene, others test for 200 to 300. and this is just a list of some of the companies. And there are a lot of mixed opinions about direct-to-consumer genetic testing. Some people think that it is sort of a yellow brick road leading us to the promised land of personalized medicine, empowerment, understanding one's own genetic makeup, and other people feel that it's nothing but a little man behind a curtain pulling levers. But no matter how you feel about it, it's one thing that's clear is that we're not in Kansas anymore, that this has sort of changed the paradigm to some extent of how genetic testing is going to work in the future. There have been lots of outstanding questions about direct-to-consumer testing, namely sort of, the benefits and the harms. But it's only recently that empirical data has actually been collected to start to try and document some of those things. To that end, we did a survey of DTC companies' customers. And some of the main questions we were trying to address is just who is it that's purchasing these tests, the sort of early adopters, how do they interpret the data that they get, and how do they act upon these interpretations? There are several other questions that one might ask. So to look at DTC consumers' perspectives, we did a survey of customers of three of the big companies, at least at that time. 23andMe, Navigenics, and DecodeMe, and those are the prices at that time, the time people were purchasing. Those are the prices of the services. 23andMe now you can get for $99. We got the companies to randomly sample and contact customers for us 2 to 8 months after the folks had gotten their results. We wanted to give a little bit of lag time so people could have a chance to look at their results and digest and think about them. They took an online survey that took about 20 minutes and they got $10 for it. We did this work about 18 months ago. The companies invited a total of 3,200 almost respondents. We got a 37% response rate, and of those, 90% qualified. I can tell you about the disqualifications if you want. The most important one is that people either paid for the test themselves or they were given it as a gift from a friend or family member, but we excluded people who got it as a gift or promotion from someone who worked at one of the companies. And there were quite a few of them, actually. Just a few notes about the survey. It was a cross-sectional survey, so just one point in time. We don't have follow-up information about outcomes or how people did along the way. We didn't collect any data on people's specific genes or risks that they learned about to maintain privacy. The companies would not go for this, and they thought their customers wouldn't be interested, and so we agreed. We also agreed with the companies to aggregate the data of all the customers. The goal of the study was not sort of market research to compare, how good one company is compared to the others. Certainly there are questions, interesting things to be learned from doing that kind of work, but the companies weren't interested in that, and so to gain access to their customers, we agreed. And then one thing that I'll get into a little bit is that we asked people, so since we couldn't get actual genetic data, we did ask people to interpret two sample risk results and then ask them some questions. We showed them sample risks and then asked them some questions about them. So I don't want to spend too much time on this slide, but it just sort of gets at a little bit who it was that was buying these tests. On the left column, you've got DTC customers. On the right, you've got the U.S. adult population. And what you can see is that DTC customers were considerably older than the American population, 55 to 74. Very high income, 68% earning over $85,000 compared to 28% in the general population. Highly educated, more than half had a postgraduate degree compared to five times more than in the U.S. And more white non-Hispanics than in the U.S. So not completely surprising, especially given the cost at that time. So why do people get testing? Why do people purchase these services? Before purchasing, 42% said they were interested in at least one specific health condition that the company was testing for. And we asked about sort of broad categories of diseases. And the most important ones to people were cancer, cardiovascular disease, and neurological diseases. Less important down at the bottom, mental health, carrier status for rare diseases, eye diseases, and response to prescription drugs. We also asked folks, how important were these following statements or items when you were deciding whether or not to use a company's service? And most important to people, 94% said that it was important to them to satisfy their curiosity. 91% wanted to know what diseases they were more likely to develop. And Navigenics customers didn't have access to ancestral data, but among the other two companies, it was very important to people to learn about their ancestral roots. making sure their privacy protected, important but not quite as much. Participating in genetic research, not that important. Wanting to try something new, two-thirds of people. And then recommendations from families and doctors, sort of word of mouth, not all that important. Of course, and this was, again, early, so there's not that much word of mouth to be passed around, to be honest. So how do people feel about the testing? Overall, nearly 90% say they were very satisfied or satisfied. 10% didn't weigh in one way or the other. And only 2% went as far as to say they were dissatisfied. We feel like there's a little bit of a sort of, first to buy the iPhone effect. You go out and pay, $600 for the iPhone. Chances are you're not going to tell people that you think it was a dumb idea. So, but, people do have a chance to react to their information and overall some satisfaction. And that cut across demographic groups. Almost 9 in 10 said that they satisfied their curiosity. About half said that they had relief from uncertainty about some aspect of their health. 8% said they felt there was nothing they could do to change their health risks. So a bit of fatalism there. So, which sort of leads to the question of how do people interpret these data that they're getting. Overall, 88% said that they felt the reports were easy to understand. 58% said that they learned something that they could use to improve their health that they didn't already know. We wish we had, but we didn't follow up and ask, what was it that you learned? We really kick ourselves about that, but there's no going back. So we want to know how people interpret the data, whether they understand it, and then what they think about it. So to do this, as I mentioned earlier, participants were shown two hypothetical test results that use the exact format that their company uses in their reports. So the first result we showed was about type 2 diabetes. We said it was Mary's risk, and she had a 25% risk of developing type 2 diabetes compared to 30% in the population. And this is how Navigenics would display that data, at least back then. And so this is what Navigenics customers saw. 23andMe customers saw this. You can see 25 out of 100 for Mary, 30 for the average, and then some information. And DecodeMe, this is their version of the same result, 25% and 30% down at the bottom there. And then a sort of relative risk, how you're doing compared to the population up on the top. The second result that we showed everyone was about Mike and his risk of colorectal cancer. We told people that Mike had an 11% risk of colorectal cancer compared to 5% in the population. And again, this is what Navigenics customers saw, 23andMe customers, and DecodeMe customers. So just different colorful representations. So the first thing we wanted to know is, do people just understand this result? So we asked, based on the information above, which answer best describes how Mary and Mike's risk of disease compares to the average person's risk? And you can see that 90% understood that Mary is at lower risk of getting type 2 diabetes, 5% thought she was at higher risk than the general population, and 2% didn't know. We didn't count the sort of, they have the same risk, sort of either for or against, because there's that sort of subjective, yeah, it looks about the same to me, which, you know, whether you think it's valid or not, it's hard to sort of categorize that. So 7% didn't understand that Mary was at lower risk. 4% didn't understand that Mike was at higher risk. And actually, if you look at the difference between the 7 and 4%, it's statistically significant, which just goes to sort of, I think, issues of numeracy and people not as easily able to interpret, lower risk compared to higher risk everyone's sort of looking for and more accustomed to. Looking at the frequency of these incorrect responses, we see that as participants grew older, there were much, this is the percent of people who got those questions wrong. Purple, dark is Mary, and light purple is Mike. And you can see getting older, older participants more likely to get it wrong. And people who said that they thought the reports were difficult to understand were telling the truth. They were three times as likely to get one of those two questions wrong. So in addition to do you understand it, there's the question of what does it mean to you? How does it make you feel? So, and I'm just going to focus on the Mike scenario, the high risk of colorectal cancer. We asked, if you were Mike, would you consider yourself to be at high, moderate, or low risk of colon cancer? And we got a real spread of responses. 45% said that 11% risk would make them feel they were at high risk, 42% at moderate risk, 13% at low risk. And, the sort of initial interpretation of that is some people are looking at the absolute, 11%. I got an 89% chance I won't get it. Some people are looking at the relative risk, and some people are maybe, it cuts both ways, and, it's moderate. But we thought that was interesting. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. So what do people do with this information? 28% said they discussed results with a healthcare professional, including 20% who'd talked to a primary care provider, 1% who'd contacted a genetic counselor, and 19% who'd talked to other healthcare professionals. Obviously, some people talk to more than one provider. 9% had followed up with additional laboratory tests. Well, we don't know what tests or whether they were appropriate. We did see that people who discussing results with a healthcare professional may increase people's perceived utility. So 73% of people who discussed the results with a provider felt that they learned something new to improve their health, compared to 52% who hadn't talked to a provider about their results. And that odds ratio is significant, adjusting for all the demographics. Back to what people did with their data, 16% said they changed their medication or supplement regimens, including 10% who changed the dietary supplement, 3% who changed over-the-counter medicines, 4% who changed a prescription medicine, and 0.4% who changed a prescription without consulting a doctor. We asked a bit about behavioral changes, and again, this is at one point in time. We don't know if people were continuing to do these things or whether or not they were appropriate. But a third of people said that they were being more careful about their diet. One person actually said that they were letting themselves go, and 65% were doing the same thing. 14% said that they were exercising more. 31% said that they were more determined to exercise. And nobody said they were exercising less or that they were less determined, although, as my gym is well aware, it's hard to exercise less than zero. So back to that personal, the interpretation of Mike's colorectal cancer risk. Again, we had that widespread. And what we saw was that when we adjust for all the demographic factors, education, whether or not you have a healthcare provider, income, race, etc., that people who said if they got Mike's result, that they would consider themselves to be at high risk. So you've got people who would consider themselves to be at low risk if they got Mike's result, moderate risk, and high risk if they got Mike's result. with increasing interpretation of that risk, those people were more likely to seek information. We asked people, did you just get information about a condition? They were more likely to seek information, talk to a healthcare professional. They were more likely to say they were being more careful about their diet and more likely to exercise more. We thought this was fairly interesting. It's not necessarily a causal relationship, but it seems to indicate that, to us at least, that there's a very clear relationship between how people interpret the exact same data and the behaviors that, and this isn't even the data they received. We don't know what data people got, but the way in people will interpret this data seems, to really influence what they'll do with it, which isn't surprising, but to our knowledge, hadn't really been documented very well for genetic testing, or at least this kind of genetic testing. So in conclusion, we saw that the demographics of early DTC customers are highly skewed, that the use of additional healthcare resources may add value and utility to the test, although we don't know if that's appropriate or, whether the value added is worth the cost of going to see a doctor, whether those visits were extra or sort of, I was going to see my doctor anyway, that kind of thing. We see that adjusting for demographic factors, the subjective interpretation of risk seems to strongly influence follow-up behaviors, or at least is strongly connected to it. I thought I edited this slide, but there's a strong relationship there. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a causal one. And that finding suggests that very careful attention needs to be paid to sort of how these risk reports are generated, what baseline risks are used, and how relative and absolute risk are both relayed. The demographics were so skewed I had to put it on both conclusion slides. There's a lot of curiosity about what might ail you. Satisfaction in the early going for these products seems high. And although I didn't show it to you, but the people who found the reports difficult to read were much less satisfied with these reports. And not on the conclusions is that there's a little bit of information we see that, there's some encouraging sign that maybe getting this information leads people to adopt healthier behaviors, but we don't know if those, better diet, more exercise, we don't know if those behaviors were appropriate, we don't know if they continued, and we don't have any outcomes data, so it's just a suggestion, and we wouldn't say that we see people are getting healthier because of this. Thanks to APHA for holding this and for having me talk. These are my coworkers, the survey participants, and the people at the companies who helped us. Thanks so much.